Welcome back to the Layman's Law School. I am Chase Hawk, and along with my co-host Reed Sanders and Sean Merzlach, we are going to discuss some of the issues of the day. And today we're going to try and give you some tips on how to properly interact with the police, how to assert your rights, and when to use your common sense and cooperate with the police. Sit back, relax, and hopefully you'll learn a few things. Guys, it's been another good week.
Always a great week.
Yeah, it's been a tough week, but it's been a good one.
That's right. And we have a tiny tradition. Reed forces this very classy.
Essentially, this is pure class. The reason that these are pure class is because I bought them from a special gas station that when you buy a 12-pack, they just cut the 24-pack in half.
I see.
So you just get, it's open already. You don't even have to open the box.
Right. We're not going to rat on them because I don't think that's legal.
I'm 100% it's not.
Cut case. It's a cut case.
It's a cut case. Clear cut case. And the best beer in the world. All right. Cheers, gentlemen.
Mm-hmm. Happy Friday.
And that just welcomes you to the weekend.
Okay.
You can tell that's a 2022.
It is a 2022. It hadn't fermented enough. A little bubbly.
Tastes like dirty yellow water.
Hose pipe water.
Yeah. Mm. Well, today we're going to talk about a series of different police interactions. We have them kind of categorized a little bit. You have your consensual kind of interactions where policemen just come up and start talking to you. You have what's called a Terry stop. Okay, and then that is when they're actually going to come and stop and actually pat you down. And then we have the traffic stop. And ultimately, it's when they actually have probable cause and actually do arrest you. So we're going to talk about all of those interactions and give you some tips about how to handle yourself during those interactions. We're very lucky to have Sean Merzlach here because he is on both sides of this issue, has been on both sides of this issue. Sean, how long were you a police officer before you went to law school?
12 years. Okay. 12 years. A couple of those years I was part-time while I was going through school, and then about 8 years, most of that as a criminal investigator.
Okay. And any interactions with the public?
Oh, 1,000, but mostly good, mostly good interactions. Very, very rare, did I have an interaction that I regretted or that the person regretted.
I highly doubt that. Yeah.
I'm just saying, when I treated everybody with respect and very rarely was I leaving the jail and a person I had arrested, be yelling and cussing at me.
Okay.
Which just very rarely happened.
It's the stunning good looks. That's all we bring you on. Eye candy.
It could be, but I think it's more about, it's about respect, treating everybody equally. And, when people know that they did something wrong and you treat them with respect and you don't act like, you're a holy God because you're a police officer.
Yeah.
They understand I did something wrong.
You're doing your job.
Right. Yeah. Thanks for not being
a jerk.
An a-hole.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Well, we're going to do something a little bit different today. We've got some clips from FlexYourRights.org. This is an organization, a group of lawyers that get together to sort of help the public and educate them about how to interact with the police and how not to interact with the police. And they produced some videos that show one of the most common interactions you have, and that's just a regular traffic stop. So I'm going to have D'Angelo back there play a video of this initial traffic stop. And we're going to talk about some of the things that are do's and don'ts here.
I was ready to explode. This was like the fourth time this year I've been pulled over for nothing.
License and registration?
Yeah, I know the drill, man.
So what we're going to be talking about here is the attitude test and interacting with the police. Sean, what did you see wrong with what he was doing there?
I would say he failed the attitude test.
Yeah.
And we're talking about, you're talking about the officer.
I would say the traffic stop individual.
I know. I'm joking with you.
You have to think about these things as a inherently anxiety-inducing situation, both for the officer because he doesn't have any idea who he's pulling over, whether it's just for this weaving, in the traffic, running the stop sign or something, or whether that's, a dangerous person in the car. He has no idea. And, you know, for you to immediately heighten the alert of an already alerted officer,
right?
It's just a recipe for disaster. It's going to turn the officer against you from the get-go. He's very likely to, you know, to think things into that. You know, right. Why is this person acting like that? Why are mm-hmm. they? It's suspicious to me.
Well, I will say, too, add to your point, Sean, I think that even if you take the words, not how he said it, but the words that he said mm-hmm. don't help him either. Now, he may be exacerbated by, I've been pulled over a bunch, mm-hmm. blah, 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 whatever. And that may be true. But when he says, I know the drill, mm-hmm. to an officer, I would think that means, oh, this guy's been arrested. This guy's been, you mm-hmm. know, I know.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it yeah. might be up. So, you know, that gives me more. That would give me more pause right. if I'm the officer.
Yeah, and you got to remember out there that these police officers, they're trained to actually touch the back of your car as they walk up to it. If I'm not mistaken, to touch the taillight. And so, they're doing that for those of you out there that don't right. know. So their fingerprints will be on the car in case they are murdered. So they start that interaction protecting themselves
yeah.
just so that the person can be caught and he can't do this to anybody else. It's not going to help him at all, right? But he starts interaction with that type of training. Sure. That's what, and so he starts on that sort of heightened level. And then if you come at him with aggression, tell me if I'm wrong, Sean, but you're supposed to meet that aggression at that area or de-escalate or go to the next level of sort of control. Like you are supposed to not allow yourself to be sort of dominated in those situations.
Sure. And it kind of goes along the baselines of, you know, use of force and police officers. But, you know, anytime, you know, when I don't know what they call it these days, but, mm-hmm. you know, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, they taught a course to police officers called verbal judo. Mm-hmm. And it was all about trying to de-escalate.
Okay.
And anytime somebody acts like this, mm-hmm. you're trying to de-escalate the situation, you know, to keep it from turning into something, right. you know, explosive.
Right.
You know, if a person like that, I pulled them over and they acted like that, mm-hmm. you know, my training would be, I would immediately, you know, say, hey, buddy, this isn't any big deal. Right. I pulled sure. you over just because you were weaving, right. you know, wanted to make sure you were okay to drive.
Yeah.
And then a lot of times that would dispel that person.
Right.
You know, okay, well, maybe this isn't because, you know, this is the fourth time I've been stopped right. in this neighborhood, you know.
This is a common sense question too, Sean. You couldn't see it because it was behind you, but as you're walking up to the car, you could see the driver of the vehicle. Mm-hmm. You don't know what he's doing, but his head is going back and forth, like you can see he's moving sure. around. Mm-hmm. I would assume as an officer that would give you kind of pause too to get, because you don't know what's happening.
Sure.
Do you look in the car as you're walking up? Mm-hmm. How does that work?
Well, I mean, this is one of the most, if you think about it, one of the most dangerous things that police officers do. Mm-hmm. They're walking up to a car and the person generally has a strategic advantage. You know,
yeah.
They're concealed, you know, mostly. They have, you know, a side view mirror that they can see out of. When you're walking up to a car, you can only see a very little bit of the individual as a police officer who's driving the car from the side view
right.
mirror. You don't know whether or not they have a gun sitting in their lap because you can't see that far necessarily. Nowadays, you know, tons of cars come factory tinted from the,
yeah.
you know,
from the backside
vehicle yep. manufacturers and those back windows. And if they don't, tons of people get their windows tinted, you know, so right. they're walking up on a situation that, like I said, they have no idea who sure. they're pulling over, what but is in the car.
If you see somebody moving versus somebody staying still in the vehicle, what, I mean, you would recommend staying still, I would assume.
Absolutely. Anytime,
hands on the wheel where they can see them.
Anytime you get pulled over, mm-hmm. it's a good idea to not, you know, not make
moving
a bunch
around.
Of furtive movements.
Yeah.
Don't go ahead and start reaching for your registration, mm-hmm. your insurance that's in the glove yeah. box.
Just
because
wait.
The police officer is seeing that as this guy is going for something or
sure.
this guy may be hiding something. You
right.
know, just pull over, you know, keep your hands in plain sight on the steering wheel preferably. Mm-hmm. And then when the police officer asks for your license, your registration, your insurance, you know, that's the time, you know, for you to
right.
make those movements so the officer can observe them.
Uh-huh.
No one's a threat to one another and it's not heightening the officer senses by thinking
sure.
something might be going on.
Right.
And one of the other tips I've heard that police officers prefer is that at night, you go ahead and turn on your light or turn down your
the
visor.
Interior
so
light,
they put on
yeah.
the interior light so they can actually see what you're doing as they're walking up.
Yeah.
They can see where your hands are, all that. And a lot of these conflicts start from get that light out of my face, man. You know, whatever. He's got the light on because your car is completely dark and you're moving around going in your glove box.
Right.
So hands on the wheel. Turn your light on if it's at night. Yeah. Good rules?
All good rules.
Let's see the next little video, because I think he makes a couple of other mistakes here.
License and registration?
Yeah, I know the drill, man.
Excuse me?
License? Registration.
The attitude, again, was off.
Good evening, officer. How's it going?
Did you know you were swerving between lanes?
No, officer.
Let me see your license and registration.
Sure. My license. Here's my registration.
That isn't the example of how to properly handle the sort of attitude test to start out with, correct?
Certainly a lot better than the first option of it. You know, anytime you can, like I said, lower the alert of an officer and let, you know, that person realize that you're just cooperating, you know, you're not being a jerk and cooperating any way you can with their, you know, lawful request.
The officer's I'll say this, is we're not advocating, you don't have to kiss the officer's ass.
No.
And you know, because these videos sometimes get a little, they're trying to show a point so they go overboard a little bit.
A little dramatic.
A little dramatic.
But good evening, officer.
Right. You know, you can be
yourself
teetoed about it. You can not be happy about it. Like, I don't freaking want to get pulled over. But you get, you know, yes, sir, here it is. Like, you don't have to be like, you know, Your Majesty, yes, sir, here's my license.
Sure, sure.
But it's just not that you don't have to be mean or abrupt about it. I think that's, it seems like common sense to most people, but when you're in that situation, I think you lose your head a little bit.
Yeah.
You never know what that person's going through at that moment. And so it works in both ways. You never know what that officer's going through at that moment either.
Sure.
So, you know, it goes, it's just be nice to each other, even in bad situations.
That'll get you a long way. I think the next little clip we have is it's actually him getting out of the vehicle, and we'll talk a little bit about that after we watch this little part.
No need for the attitude there, bro. Yes. I'm looking out for your safety and everyone else's on this road.
Whatever, man.
Okay, step out of the vehicle for me. Turn around and put your hands in the air.
First of all, can the police at a traffic stop order you out of your car?
Absolutely.
Why?
There's just a general rule in law that the courts have found that, you know, it's an inherently dangerous situation for the police officer's protection. They can identify the occupants in a traffic stop, and they can ask them to exit the vehicle for officer safety.
If they feel like they're being threatened or there's a sort of heightened danger, they can remove them from the place that will most often have you.
And I think that's, for most people, that's not understood.
No.
And that causes a lot of problems in the public.
Yeah. So people would, in that situation, I've seen in plenty, there's plenty of viral videos on it.
Tons of.
Well, what did I do? Step out of the car. Well, what did I do? You get a few of those.
Right.
From what I understand and from what I've seen. And then after that, what happens?
It depends on how well trained the officer is. You know, and the viral videos that we see, are a small percentage of the population, and it's usually, you know, the police officer bashing the window out with his ass baton, ripping the person out of the car.
Right.
You know, but I would say a large majority of them, the officer, you know, just explains to the people, look, you know,
get out of here.
You have to get out of the vehicle. You know, all I need to do is conduct this investigation, write you your citation, give you a warning, you know, whatever. The law requires you to get out of the vehicle, and most people say, you know, okay, I understand, and get out of the vehicle.
Right.
And we're talking about essentially where rights collide. And so the courts over and over are going to find in favor of the officer in situations like that because the officer is the one at most in the most dangerous situation. So people, I see the viral videos, why they do this, how could they get away with this, blah, blah, blah. Nobody was hurt, but, you know, they ruined my window, whatever it is. The courts are going to rule in the officer's favor because of that. They have discretion to say, you know, I'm out here by myself, and he won't even follow a simple task. And that makes, you know, escalates and creates, you know, problems.
Yeah, one of the other things we saw, all right, so first of all, if they ask you to get out of the car, get out of the car. Don't ask them. What did I do? What reasonable suspicion do you have that I'm committing a crime? All that's out the door. You don't have the right to stop them from doing their job. It's like if you stop them from getting, if you're not getting out of your car, you're not following a lawful command, then you're obstructing a police officer. So then you are actually committing a crime that you can be arrested for, cited for, that type of thing. So they instruct you to get out of the car. Get out of the car. Secondly, how do you get out of the car? Now, we just watched the video. That's not how to do it.
You absolutely don't get out of the car in that rapid manner. And, I mean, that guy was basically charging the officer.
Right.
You know, in a real-life scenario, I wouldn't be surprised if that individual was, you know, tased, pepper yep. sprayed, you know, something mm-hmm. like that. Yeah. It's just, it's not normal
Something bad
behavior.
Was going to happen right there.
Exactly. And, yeah. again, you're escalating the situation and, you know, turning what could have been a written warning or a...
Or nothing.
A, you know...
Your tail light was flickering, just letting you know your sure. tire's low, anything, right?
Yeah, and that's important. I want to talk a little bit about that because of that kind of environment. That what he just did, jumping out of the car in that way, is one of the things that can make the situation escalate very, very fast.
Sure.
And people have this perception because we televise the salacious things that occur in the news when it involves the police, because it is basically a person with power, you know, hurting a person that's weak or unarmed. But I think that if people were actually to talk about the facts, and that's really important, you know, how you feel about it. I feel very strongly about what happened to George Floyd. I feel strongly about anybody that's hurt when they shouldn't be hurt. But when it comes to actually assessing whether or not, you know, people are actually being killed, a lot of people don't know. You have about 60 million police interactions with the public every year. You have okay. about 10 million actual arrests. Okay. How many police killings where the police officer actually kills the person that they're attempting to arrest, do you think that occur in the United States per year?
Per year?
Mm-hmm.
Pure guess.
This involves every type of killing involving people that are robbing banks, people that are engaged in a drug deal and gone wrong. The police interact with them, shoot.
I'd say it's still far less than 1%.
I'm going 2,000.
2,000? I need a number.
What is less than 1% of 10 million?
It's 1,000.
That's pretty close.
I'm closer.
Okay. Now that includes all interactions with police. That mean, like I said, that includes bank shootouts with bank robbers,
yeah, sure.
people that are, you know, murder by suicide, all those interactions.
Yeah.
And so when you actually look at this, we get about 150 people that are killed every year. It's too many. There's no doubt
yeah,
about that.
Nobody's
but
begging that.
I think this is a, you know, and a lot of these things, some of them are unjustified, but some of them are pretty borderline. Like that situation right there.
Yeah.
You got a new police officer. Doesn't know what he's doing, scared to death. He's in a difficult or scary part of town. Somebody busts out of the car and runs at him, and he just gets right. scared.
In this world that we have podcasts and TikTok and all this stuff, mm-hmm. so there's everybody asserting their rights. The problem is that people truly don't understand their rights. They look at, like, say, in Georgia, they'll be spouting out code sections, mm-hmm. right? Well, y'all, as lawyers, know that doesn't tell you a whole lot. Mm-hmm. Case law tells you, yeah, it's a code section, but it's still that code section may say you can't do this. Mm-hmm. But then the case law says, well, in certain situations, you can do this.
Sure. Yeah.
So just because you know the code, we call that jailhouse lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
You want to go to prison or die? Yeah. Listen to a jailhouse lawyer.
Yeah. And that's what we see a lot with some of these interactions with police, these Vauer videos from these First Amendment auditors, from people they get pulled over and they want to somehow, you know, flex the right on the police officer. They try to do it in a clumsy way. Like they feel like yes. they can't be taken out of the car, you know, with that. No, you can't. It's
yes,
that
you
is
can.
Lawful.
And in certain situations, 100%. They're right. But most of them, that's like by the letter of the code, they may be right. But the case law, which they don't know and haven't read, says the complete opposite.
It just, you know, leads you to a situation where you as the motorist might be inviting additional investigation,
right.
Additional hassle in your life.
Yeah. And so, like, I've seen that a lot. That is a consistent thing, that the police officers want them to roll down the window more. They get people like, I don't have to do that.
Right.
And they, you know, stick their license out the window.
And they're right.
They're right. But then what the police officer would be within their rights at that point to remove them from the car.
Absolutely.
And so, let's, you know, you're starting out the interaction, you know, letting them know this is going to be a confrontational.
Right.
You know, you can show a person that you know your rights without coming out and saying all this, you know, ridiculous stuff. Okay, the next clip we're going to show you is basically how you can assert your right to not have your vehicle searched during a traffic stop.
Now, Darren, we've had some problems with gangs moving guns down this highway. You're not packing any Tech-9s, are you?
No, sir.
I didn't think so. So you don't mind if I take a look, do you?
Officer, I know you're just doing your job. I don't have any guns or whatever, but I don't consent to searches.
He was calm. He spoke with the police officer. And there's a group that basically any right they can assert, they try to assert it during one of these interactions. And do you have to answer the police officer's question about whether you have guns or not, right?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, you don't have to. You have your right to remain silent. I don't answer questions. You can do that. But in that situation, just you can be a normal person, have a normal conversation.
Cooperative citizen.
That's right.
Absolutely.
And then still assert your right in a calm manner. And you're by saying, I'm not going to consent to a search, what legal effect does that have on the stop?
The legal effect is the officer can't search. Mm-hmm. What we have to, think about is the Fourth Amendment mm-hmm. of our Constitution prevents the government from mm-hmm. unreasonable, warrantless searches of us, mm-hmm. whether it be our car, house, anything. Well, you don't have to have a warrant to search a car.
Right.
The courts, mm-hmm. have said that, well, there's an exception to a car mm-hmm. because it's a movable object. Mm-hmm. Evidence mm-hmm. could be hidden, concealed, mm-hmm. destroyed later on, that you only need probable cause mm-hmm. to conduct that search. So if an officer doesn't have probable cause to search mm-hmm. the car, then he can't just search it. Right. He would either need to develop probable cause or get the person's consent. Right. And you have the ability to consent or not consent.
Right.
And, what that individual did is just, cooperate and tell him, look, I don't have anything, to hide in this car, but I don't consent to any searches.
Right. And he did it in a very clear way. That's really all you have to do is you have to make it clear that you're not consenting for them to search. They can't search your bags. They can't search your car, your glove box. Once you have sort of made that announcement to them that you don't want your stuff searched.
Well, let me jump in real quick, mm-hmm. Chase. So I think too it's important to know because I see a lot of viral videos that go, mm-hmm. and it's just people just spouting, "I know my rights. I know my rights. I know my rights. I know my rights," and they may well know them. Like in this situation, if he said, "I know my rights. I don't have to, allow you to search a car," mm-hmm. that's still correct, but. It's kind of like the old saying is, if you have to say you have power, then you don't have power.
Exactly.
You don't have to say it. Just tell it. Show them that you know your rights.
Right.
Don't just say that you know your rights. Mm-hmm. And he showed he knew his rights by saying, "No, man, look, I don't have any of this crap in here. I'm trying to get home. No, I don't, allow you to search my car."
Right. And the way he handled it, the police would not try to, in that situation, in most cases, try to escalate the situation.
Right.
If you come, back at them in a nasty way, maybe they have a canine unit that's a block away.
And they're human.
They're going to react. Yeah, like I said, you don't know what that person is going through. You might have the new guy that don't know what he's doing.
Right.
You might have the guy that just has a gambling problem and just got a divorce and don't have much to live for.
Right.
And in which case, you're going to have a bad day no matter what.
And like we've said many times on the podcast, you can be right and you can also be dead.
That's right. And you don't win the fight in the street.
That's right.
You win it in the courtroom later.
What happens if they search anyway?
So they search your car. Let's say they search your car, and let's just say they found a pound of marijuana, but they didn't have your consent, nor did they have probable cause.
No dog, nothing.
If they didn't have probable cause and didn't have consent, it would be an unreasonable, warrantless search, mm-hmm. violation of the person's rights under the Fourth Amendment. Mm-hmm. And if they had a good trial attorney who specialized in something like that, they would probably file a motion to suppress. And, if it actually went to court and there was a hearing held based on those facts and circumstances, the judge would agree and say, there was a Fourth Amendment violation. This evidence, I don't care that you found a pound mm-hmm. of marijuana.
A dead body.
10,000 pounds of fentanyl.
Right. Yeah.
The evidence is suppressed and you can't use it, which means if you're charged with possession of marijuana, and they can't use the marijuana in the case, mm-hmm. the case gets dismissed.
Right.
Yeah. And so for you people out there that are just thinking, we want to make sure that the police aren't infringing on your rights and stuff like that, there is already a very powerful corrective measure that the courts and the justice system has taken to keep police officers from violating your rights.
Overstepping
their bounds. They have to let criminals go.
Yep.
You don't think that pisses the police officers off and the captains
and the judges and everybody.
Right.
And Sean, the same situation that you're talking about, that would be kicked out. If you're getting yanked out of the car and you're kicking and screaming and trying to fight the officer, and then you get that charge, even if the marijuana gets kicked out, you've
still
got to deal with the other charge.
Absolutely. Yeah. Even if you're, if you acted in the manner that he did when he ran out, basically ran and charged the officer when he told him to get out of the car, and then a warrantless search was done after they tased him and arrested him.
Right.
Well, that's a whole different story.
Right.
That's not an unreasonable search. That's a search incident to arrest, which is another exception that the courts have carved out and said, if you arrest somebody, you can search the immediate area, you know, that
where they were,
you know, in, you know. Mm-hmm. So there's just so many things that it's so fact specific to every type situation that you have to do.
You talked a little bit about it. We were talking about probable cause. When we talk about probable cause, that is such a weird phrase because it's, you know, how you define it. You can define it in words, but it's almost like the definition of pornography.
You know it when you see it.
So, but no, it usually has to do. It has to be more than a suspicion. It has to be more than a hunch. You have to be able to articulate.
It can't be Columbo.
Exactly. Yeah. And then in order to justify the search. And so there's certain things that justify a search. For instance, if he were to pull you over for speeding, that isn't probable cause that you've got something in the car that's illegal.
It's only probable cause that you were speeding.
Right. Exactly. But if he pulls you over and let's say for instance, he sees the little Ziploc baggies that are just about the size of what you put
dime bags.
Yeah,
stamps.
Dime bags. Yes.
Dime bags. You put stamps in.
But yeah. Yes.
Never drugs in those bags.
I see. You sees those sitting on the dash, or you sees a shotgun sticking out from under a shot off shotgun sticking out from underneath the car.
A little Cheech and Chong pipe.
All those things, right?
You never know,
right?
Plain view.
Yep.
Establishing probable cause.
Right. So if it's in plain view, if they can see it from outside, from just looking through the window of the car, and they see something that is illegal or likely to be illegal, that would give them probable cause to actually search the vehicle under those circumstances.
And therefore, they wouldn't need your consent.
Right. So if you have like an expired tag.
That's probable cause that your tag's expired.
Right.
Not to search your vehicle.
Here's what I think the public needs to understand about what y'all are saying is you don't have to know all these rules. Right, you don't have to know what is probable cause and what's not. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is say, "I don't allow you to search this vehicle."
Right.
Then, if they say we're searching it, don't fight them. Say okay.
Yeah.
Then you'll find out if they had probable cause or not. If they didn't, then it goes back to what Sean was talking about with the case.
It gets thrown out.
Yeah. But if you start fighting or whatever because you think that whatever paraphernalia was not probable cause,
right?
Then you're in trouble. And that's always what we talk about all the time. We have calls in the middle of the night at a scene or something. It's you can't win the case at the scene. You can win the case in the courtroom.
Yeah, yeah.
And what I think happens to the general public is they want to win the case at the stop.
Absolutely. They know what their rights are. They might be right.
They're
being infringed upon. For instance, I've seen these people, they start talking to cops, and they say, it's my First Amendment right to speak however I want.
Right.
And so they will cuss at the cops and say, you know, get back in your effing car, give me my effing ticket, right? Well, that is your freedom of speech. and it is protected by the Constitution.
Sure.
However, just for instance, in the state of Georgia, if you do that in public and there is a 14-year-old around, okay, there is a code section that says that you are now disturbing the peace,
right,
for which you can be arrested. Now they can pull you out of the car.
Search your vehicle.
And it's not, you do. A person with lawful authority to shoot you if you threaten them with a gun that's trained, that's outside your car, that is not the person to have a confrontation with at any time.
And even if you don't commit another crime, the attitude of the individual and the way, you know, that they portray themselves and act toward the police officer can change the result. We talked about it earlier, whether you got a warning, a written warning, arrest. Anytime there's probable cause that you violated any law in the state of Georgia,
right,
the officer has discretion of what to do for the most part. If, you know, if you received a ticket for running a stop sign, the officer can write you, can give you a verbal warning. He can give you a written warning. He can write you a citation with your promise to appear later on at court. Or he could take you to jail right there.
Yeah.
That's their discretion. Yeah. Obviously, it's more economical, more efficient, you know, to write people tickets, let them show up to court later.
Yeah.
But a person acting in a specific way, you know, like these people, you know, that you see videos of people that say, I'm not signing anything. Well, you're not signing. All you were signing is that you received this ticket and you would show up for court. So, okay, you're not signing it. You're still getting this ticket.
And you're going to jail.
But you're going to jail.
Well, and I think it's also important to note that we're talking about the person in the vehicle. And we're also talking about Sean, what Sean would do. Sean is a level-headed, nice person, right? Yeah. I don't think there's
one of the greatest compliments I've received all week.
There you go.
And Sean, I want to go back, if I could, to what you said. It's like, that's a crime if you don't, you know, you've ran a stop sign. That's a crime. They can take you to jail if you don't agree to show up. So I learned that lesson hard, the hard way.
Listen, we don't need to talk about your
crime. I used to have a lead foot, and I'd had about 10 speeding tickets in about 2.5 years. But I was relatively sharp then before I went to law school. And so I'd watch my father go up and say, I would like a jury trial on the speeding ticket, but you know, in lieu of a jury trial, or you can reduce the points down. Right. He'd learned it. And so I started doing, so he knew about 6 or 7 of the speeding tickets, and he didn't know about the other ones where I was getting 95 and a 45 and stuff like that. Well, I showed up before Judge Brown with a 95 and I was walking into the courtroom, and it just so happened Dad was walking out, and he's like, what you doing here, bud? And then I explained to him what I was about to do, and he says, oh, you got to go, let me see your ticket. And it was 95. He said, oh, you going to jail. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, you're going to jail. I said, yeah, it's a speeding ticket. He's like, speeding's a crime, and you are a criminal. Criminals go to jail. And so he's like, come with me. And so we had to hustle. He may have called in a favor there. To keep me out of jail, but he was.
Crying. I mean, I have had numerous cases of where it's, you know, most of the time, you know, doing criminal defense work, we don't get hired for speeding tickets.
Yeah.
Because it's cost prohibitive for people. Right. You're going to, you know, pay us more money than to pay your $200 ticket. But when it has to do with, you know,
like CDL
little, you know, 17-year-old Johnny
that
was going 101, you know, in a 55, where they might go to jail for, you know, a couple weeks or 60 days or something.
Sure.
We do get hired on those, and we have to make those people go through hoops, defensive driving courses, all sorts of things, just in order to, you know, impress upon and hopefully persuade prosecutors, judges, you know, that this person has learned their lesson. Right. They don't need
the 30 days in jail. You're just not. You're just hoping for no jail time.
Exactly.
Okay, well, guys, we hope this is.
We got a new feature on the show, Chase.
Well, yeah, no, I'm just gonna. We're gonna move on to the new feature. But what I wanted to reiterate, I know. Okay, number one, always stay calm and cool. You have the right to remain silent. You have the right to actually refuse searches, but do so with some common sense. Get out of your car slowly. If it's dark at night, turn the light on for the police officer, hands on the wheel, and don't go for your registration until they ask. We are going to try a couple of new features today. One is called Today in Politics.
Yep.
Reed has got some interesting things that happen in the news. I don't know what they are, but I'm going to see if I can figure out a way to relate it to the law.
All right. We got to cut to Reed for the current events. So today in politics, I've brought y'all a video from Rhode Island.
Oh, my goodness.
So,
very small state.
It's a small state. A lot of large things happening. Let's see what we got.
Vote Senator Mack.
All right, so that's Senator Mack advertising for a re-election.
So this is not a constituent that likes Senator Mack. That is Senator Mack.
Yes, that's Senator Mack.
I see.
So, I mean, that's Today in Politics with Reed Sanders.
Well, it's interesting what you pick out. There's a lot going on this January 6th hearings. There's a war in Ukraine, but we're going to Rhode Island with Senator Mack.
Just because it's the smallest state doesn't mean it's not important.
No, I never said that. See how we relate that to the law. Well, there's indecency laws. I don't know. It's pretty decent. Well,
I mean,
it all goes back to what we said. You know, indecency. When you see it, you know it.
I think that's a good ending to the show there, Shawnee.
Yeah. Well, I know that you know, you have to get a certain number of signatures to even get on the ballot. So, true. You know, she knows how to get her signatures, apparently.
Yeah. I mean, she twerks for them.
Yeah, she twerks for her constituents.
Always twerking for her citizens.
All right. Well, that's going to do it today for the Layman's Law School. I hope you learned something. We're going to continue with, you know, trying to inform you on how to properly assert your rights. And we're going to talk about a few other things associated with the First Amendment auditors next time. So join us next time on the Layman's Law School. Class is dismissed.